TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, well, let me tell you, we're triple chopping.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jam-packed 2 hours for you on this Saturday morning. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time from the Dallas Morning News, Mike Hajka is going to join us. The Dallas Stars have made a lot of news this offseason, be it from trades or free agent signings. So we're going to touch base with Mike Hajka to catch up on everything Dallas Stars related. Coming up at 10:30, he's from the Hockey News. He's Adam Proto. He is. We're going to spend a lot of time with him, probably most of it talking CBA. Because that's really been in the news lately, unfortunately. For better or worse, we have to talk about it. And Adam is known as a guy with a strong opinion regarding the collective bargaining agreement and the negotiations thereof. So we'll be joined by him in about 90 minutes' time. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg to my immediate left, Richard Pollock on his left. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Drew. It's great to be back on air nice and early. We've got biscuits in the studio that your very nice wife made. So it's going to be a fun couple hours here.
You're fueled by biscuit power already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Biscuits, Drew.
Biscuits, plural?
Well, you just mispronounced it.
I said biscuit power.
I haven't had one yet. Want to pass one over here?
Sure. We'll pass one over here in a second or two. You guys ready to get talking about some hockey?
Almost as ready as the Bombers were last night.
I don't know. That's neck and neck. It's close there. That was a hell of a Bomber performance last night, but that's for another day and time that we can discuss that. I watched the game. That was depressing enough. Don't need to discuss it any further. Let's start with the Jets. They made some news late in the day yesterday. First signing they announced was re-signing Kyle Wellwood. Mm-hmm. He was an unrestricted free agent. They signed him for 1 year, $1.7 million. Mm-hmm. The next signing they announced that was really just right hot on the heels of the Wellwood signing was the announcement that they signed Paul Postma to a 1 year, $550,000 deal. It's a one-way contract. That's the important part in that one, is that he had been in the AHL last year, mm-hmm. was an RFA, restricted free agent, and the Jets signed him to a one-way deal, meaning that if he has to go back down to, if they want to assign him to the AHL, he'd have to clear waivers, and it'd be unlikely that he'd do that.
Yeah, and he gets his full salary in the AHL.
Right, exactly. Right. It's a one-way deal. So let's start with the Wellwood signing first. He had his career year with the Jets last season,
mm-hmm.
and most people thought that he would have been after some sort of long-term security as he entered this bout of unrestricted free agency.
Oh, I'm sure he was. Just nobody wanted to give it to him.
And that's really what it boils down to. You and I were talking off air yesterday, and I said to you, presumably, I'm speculating here. I think the Jets put this offer on the table around July 1st and said, "This is our offer. This is our final offer. Good luck. Go out, see what the marketplace can get you. If you can get a long-term deal elsewhere, then good for you. Otherwise, this is what we have on the table for you until it's no longer there."
Right. And as far as Kyle Wellwood goes, I mean, there were rumors and there wasn't much, let's call it, traction to them, or there wasn't that was reported in-depthly about that, if in-depthly is a word. But Kyle Wellwood was basically rewarded. His salary, goes up by, I believe it was doubled. I believe he was making around 700.
It was 700,000 last year.
Right. So, I mean, over double what he's making last year, and he was rewarded for his career year. I mean, we've talked about this before. Kyle Wellwood, is a very talented player and a guy that, was relied upon last year, by the Jets, and he played second power play unit, and he got some game-winning goals, and he had his career year. He got an opportunity that he probably wouldn't have gotten on any other team. I mean, he was struggling to make the fourth line, the third line of the Canucks and the Sharks, and then he took advantage of the opportunity he was given. He has deficiencies, but he was rewarded for what he did for the team. And he wasn't going to get a long-term contract, and he probably could have gone to play in Europe. But the way I look at it, he was rewarded for last year and given a contract, a nice contract. And you know, he deserved it.
Let me ask you this, guy. According to Ed Tate's article in today's Winnipeg Free Press, the Jets offered Kyle Wellwood a 2-year deal, but he was more comfortable with only taking a 1-year deal from the Jets. Does that make any sense to you at all?
Not really.
I mean,
it's like 2 years, $2 million, and then he thought he'd take 1.6 and then get somewhere else next year for the minimum or something. If you know, all goes wrong.
Do you expect that? I mean, you know, Kyle Wellwood, you know, for better or worse, he's got a bad reputation around the league in terms of his physical fitness, and he actually addresses that in his conversation with Ed Tate. Here's the, you know, he played 14 minutes and 57 seconds of ice time last year per game. Here's the quote from Kyle Wellwood. "It comes down to my fitness level," said Wellwood. Claude Noel used me really well last year, but he couldn't use me more because I wasn't as productive when he tried to increase my minutes. I'd get tired. For me, having a healthy offseason here, he had an appendectomy last offseason, and getting in really good shape, I should be able to play more minutes and handle it.
Yeah, it's all talk.
Because he's never showed in any situation that he's played in the NHL, he's never showed, A, that he's going to be in great shape.
Talk is cheap.
And B, he's never showed that he can handle, you know, more responsibility.
Talk is cheap unless it costs $1.6 million.
Exactly, but it's also more than that as well. I mean, look at these guys. We've talked about this before as far as Pavlik goes. I mean, these guys are on the ice all the time. As far as the amount of extracurricular physical activity that they do, or, you know, what they have as far as genetically, you know, they're born with, it varies. I mean, the Jets know what they're getting with Kyle Wellwood. You're getting an offensive guy. You're getting a guy that's not going to play any type of checking role. He's not physical at all. He's not the best skater. Mm-hmm. You're getting a guy who's going to be able to play a little bit on your second line, most likely on your bottom lines, hopefully. And that's that. I mean, put it this way, Richie. Kyle Wellwood isn't going to turn into a fitness freak over the summer.
That's for sure. I mean,
it's not going to happen.
No, I mean, him and Dustin Byfuglien aren't going to.
They're not going to come into camp.
Not going to come with Zach Bogosian like physique. Now, I guess the question is in terms of this signing, right? Because this signing basically fills out your forward group now.
You almost have too many forwards now.
Well, there's the question is, you know, is there essentially one spot from the young players from last year to come up, right? Because if you look at it, you know, we went over last year. Just for argument's sake, we say there's a top line of...
last year's top line. Little
Wheeler in your second line is Jokinen, Kane. We'll talk about Kane in a second. Jokinen, Kane, and we'll say it's Wellwood.
You would think with the signing, the Jets are slotting him into your second line right wing role, where he played a lot last year.
Maybe. Yeah. Then you'll say the third line. We'll just say it'll be the three, you know, the Antropov, Ponikarovsky, Bermistrov, we'll say, okay?
Right.
We'll just say that's 11. It's not to say it will be, but that's just that could be. Then your fourth line will be Slater, like Mietinen, Thorburn, I guess, is a 13th forward. So literally you have
Klingberg, somebody like that.
Well, you don't literally have one spot. So Furta, Cormier, Klingberg, yeah. Mahacik. And why would you have Mahacik now? Like, Wellwood shoots right, he's on the right side. Mietinen's a right-hand shooter guy. So you have Wheeler there. Maybe one of the, you know, you can play Antropov there. You know, I'm not so sure there's a spot for him. And if there is, then you have to put the other right-handed shooting guy on the left side, which is not where he plays. So, to me, this says a lot about what they think about Spencer Mahacik, they put through waivers last year, so that says a lot about what they think of him anyways. But this signing, to me, kind of signals, okay, they don't really have much in the way of hope for him. Klingberg, probably the same, another year in the AHL, you'd assume.
Right.
I mean, the left side, to me, it's the fourth line left wing that's available right now, that Tanner Glass slot.
Right. Unless
you're going to play Bermistrov there, and that would really be wasting him.
You're right. By this Wellwood signing, it does take away that spot that, in my mind, I thought Kyle Wellwood was gone, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
In my mind, what this does is it tells you that the Jets don't have a lot of hope that, you know, there's somebody from the AHL coming up that could fill sort of, you know, that right side role.
Well, yeah. Drew,
part of me wonders if the Jets are surprised that they were able to get Wellwood at this price.
No. 1.6? No.
After his numbers last year, and I mean, you've seen some.
I'm assuming he didn't have an offer this high anywhere else.
I would assume you're right.
Like, same with Jokinen. It's not like, you know, it's not magic here. The most money wins.
I would assume you're right that Wellwood didn't have a better offer. And I thought the Jets may have thought when they made this offer or at the end of last season, you know, that, you know, Kyle Wellwood was in line for a bigger payday somewhere in some team. But
I'm not
it
so
never.
Sure about that.
Well, then why did it take
like,
so long
to the get good teams never wanted him, like San Jose, Vancouver. Teams that were on the cusp got rid of him. So who's going to want him then? The Jets are that middle pack team.
I think Kyle Wellwood the Jets got the most out of Kyle Wellwood, and Kyle Wellwood benefited by playing for the Jets. I think it's, you know, it was a really mutually beneficial signing originally last summer and again this summer. He gets a one-year deal, and the Jets are going to play him on the second and third line because they need that scoring, because they don't believe Mahacek or Ivan Telegin or any of these other guys are going to fill Wellwood's offensive contributions. And I'd have to agree with Richie. I think that, you know, there might have been some lukewarm interest, but it's a pretty good salary for him based on the fact that, you know, he wasn't cracking it with some of the better teams in the West, like we mentioned, the Canucks and the Sharks. So it's good. I mean, and, you know, we haven't even mentioned this too. Wellwood, you know, is a fan favorite. I mean,
who cares about the fans?
Well, I mean, the fans are happy about it.
I hope the Jets organization, the Jets brass, I don't think they are.
Of course not.
Fan favorite, got rid of him.
I know, of course not. But, I mean, it is something. I know that people were happy that Wellwood was signed because they were happy.
Ezzy, people were upset that Tim Stapleton left for the KHL. I mean, with all due respect to Tim Stapleton and the season he had last year, the Jets should not have been bringing Tim Stapleton back. He's a 30-year-old player who's not a bona fide NHLer.
Yeah, and I'm not making the argument that they should have signed Stapleton. I'm not saying that Wellwood was a good signing. I'm just saying that that's a positive, that the fans like Wellwood. They're happy that he's back.
That's fine. I mean, right now they're just basically, you're taking off, you know, you're replacing Mason with Montoya, you're replacing Glass with Jokinen and Ponikarovsky, really. There's been no other, and Glass and Stapleton with Jokinen and Ponikarovsky, so you've gotten better.
Right.
You know, right now, you're in the mix for the, you know, between the kind of 10, 9, 8, 7 slots.
If everything goes well for the Jets, you're right. They're probably a bottom Eastern Conference
playoff
team.
Maybe even 6, like, you don't know. I mean, remember, Drew, that 8, 6, and 5, 8 and 5, 10 and 5, there's usually like, what, 7, 8 points, so a couple games here or there, shootouts.
You're right.
And so the bigger questions I have, and we've been talking about this consistently, they surely bring back Wellwood, and it says as much about Wellwood as I think it does about what they think about the other players in the system.
I agree with that.
So this is basically, to me, a complete red flag.
Does it say to you that those guys will never be ready, or that they're just not?
Well, when else would they be ready? I mean, look at the ages of these guys. I mean, Klingberg needs a little more seasoning, but like a guy like Mahacek, they think he's done.
But Richie, when you're talking about Carl Klingberg and Spencer Mahacek, and we've written about these guys on LegalCurve.com, you can check out the website, and we've written, I think, more extensively than anybody. These guys aren't going to be top six forwards. Most likely, they're going to be third.
No.
Mahacek, I mean, Jets fans will remember, Mahacek came into the NHL last year, and he had, I think, 7 or 8 points in 10 games.
That's a small sample, though.
He's not going to fill a second-line right-winger role. I mean, the guy's going to be a third-liner in the NHL, and that's what he's projecting to be.
I don't even know if it would be that.
Same thing with Klingberg.
If they thought either of them would be anything like that, they probably would have let him play this year.
Those guys, by the way, are at the age...
How much of this...
They're older than... Shifley and Telegin. When you're talking Mahacek, he's 23.
How much of this do you think is related to having to get to the salary cap floor?
Nah. I mean, they still have to sign Kane, so I don't really think that's as much of an issue.
Aren't they already at the floor?
No.
Not yet.
But that's I don't think that's as much of an issue, Drew.
They need $3.3 million until they get to the floor, which is going to
be... How many players they have signed
right now? They have 20 players on the roster.
Three more players?
Yeah.
Three or two?
Isn't it a 22-man roster? 13 forwards, 7... seven defensemen and 2 goalies?
I'll check that.
The big guys left right now are Mahacek, Kane, and then you have to assume they're going to give either Flood a one-way or two-way deal.
Well, I mean, that's... Mark Flood, I mean, that's
not getting. He's not getting a one-way deal.
No, he can't. They have 7 defensemen. You know, let's go to break. We'll come back and we'll talk to the defense when we come back a little bit.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the fact that we haven't addressed the fact that Andrew Kane hasn't signed, and we haven't talked at all. You still haven't heard a thing about Tobias Enstrom.
Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our friends at the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the best and biggest games on their numerous HD big screens. Also, the fabulous patio, great way to spend a summer's afternoon or a summer's evening on the patio at the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Tell Brian that the Illegal Curve Hockey sent you down there.
And then he'll kindly ask you to leave.
And then I'll call the cops.
Yeah, exactly. That's usually how it works. It's a 23-man roster, so yep. We just wanted to clarify that. It's a 23-man roster.
Players on the injury reserve do not count in the 23-man limit.
Right. The players, but yeah. So, I mean, each game, usually there's three scratches. You know, you have a 20-man roster that starts each game.
You must have a roster of minimum 20 players composed of at least 18 skaters and two goalies.
Right. Okay, so the Jets have 7 defensemen now under contract, under one-way contracts with the signing of Paul Postma yesterday.
Yes.
Right. Bufflin, Bogosian, Enstrom, Hainsey, Stewart, Klitsam, and now Paul Postma.
Yep.
So, I mean, as I asked Chevy yesterday on the conference call, you know, where does this leave Mark Flood? And it's unlikely that Mark Flood is certainly not going to get a one-way contract from the Winnipeg Jets.
No,
he would have got that already.
Yeah. He might get a two-way contract, but my guess is, you know, there could be another situation where that's on the table waiting for him, and he's seeing what else is available to him potentially on a one-way deal.
And Drew, you mentioned this off-air. I mean, Mark Flood is an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
So he can sign with anybody, but obviously he's got the history with the Manitoba Moose, the St. John's Ice Caps, so... That's most likely some people were asking us on Twitter about this, but it's most likely that he'll get a two-way contract, but there's still a chance he'll sign somewhere else.
Speaking of Twitter, you can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You should also check out our website, www.illegalcurve.com. A ton of Winnipeg Jets news and morning papers, as posted by our good friend Michael Remus.
Well, and I can die a happy man, because Chris Thorburn is following Illegal Curve on Twitter. He's only following 17 people. We're one of them.
Are you one of them personally? Is he personally following you?
No, he
Thorburn, doesn't want to do that.
Thorburn has no idea who I am.
No, okay. As long as
I'm nobody.
You're somebody to us, Ezra.
You're somebody to us, Ezra.
Let's talk about Evander Kane and his continued RFA status. Yeah.
You're talking about defense. I mean,
okay. Talk about the defense.
I'm assuming Postman's going to get a shot here. Like, Klitsam has picked up off waivers, fill in for Oduya. It's time to give Postma a shot. What you want to do is you want to have the three right side defensemen, Bufflin, Bogosian, and Postma, three big guys, three puck movers on the right side, and then with a combination of Enstrom, Hainsey, and Stewart. And, I mean, that's...
And then Klitsam is your seventh
defenseman. And that's your seventh guy, yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, and Postma is going to see a lot of time. You would think he's going to see a lot of time on the power play, because that's where, you know, he's...
He'll get
I assume, if I had to guess right now, you're thinking it'd be Hainsey, Postma... Stewart, Bogosian, and Bufflin, Enstrom, something like that.
Yep.
In terms of matchups.
Yeah, I mean, that'll change it all throughout the season. But
right.
Something like that.
But you expect, I mean, Paul Postman's best attributes of his game are his offensive.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So power play and all that stuff. Second power play unit. And
yeah.
So they'll try and shelter him a bit, I'm assuming.
Right, and everything we've heard about the way he's played in St. John's and in the AHL, I mean, he's earned it. I mean, he's pretty much, he was second on the team last year in scoring. He's been close to a point a game in the AHL. You know, he's at that age. And everything you hear about Paul Postma, I mean, we've watched him a little bit, and Jets fans got to see him a couple times this year. But he's just a very steady defenseman. He doesn't he's not overly physical, but he's a good skater. He's smart. You hear a lot about his intelligence, his hockey IQ. And, you know, he's going to give them another element on the power play. And when you think about losing a guy like Johnny Oduya, you know, he replaces that. So... You know, Postma is definitely going to get a lot more time, and I would have to agree, too, with that. You know, Grant Klitsam's probably going to be the same position that, you know, Derek Meach and Mark Flood were towards the end of last year as the seventh defenseman.
There's
you know,
no the, lack of talent on the back end. The
no,
question
I mean,
can
the
they
Jets...
play can they play defense? I mean, we know these guys can move the puck for the most part, except for Stewart, really.
Yep. They're not great defensively, though.
They're not great defensively, especially as a unit. So that's the question. I mean, you can have them name value all you want. You can be paying them a bunch of money all you want. They need to be able to play defense.
Yep.
And they didn't do a great job of that last year.
No.
And can they do the good job of that? Because the contents of the defense, for the most part, haven't changed aside from Paul Postma. And he's improved in the defensive game as far as what we've heard from Keith McCambridge and Robin Short from the St. John's Telegram.
Yep.
Having said that, I mean, there's one thing. It's one thing to do that at the AHL level. It's another thing to do that at the NHL level.
You're stepping up the competition.
So you expect them to ease him in, the third pairing, as you said, second line PP, and see what he's got, and hopefully he can add some nice value to the squad. But
time will tell on that.
You need to be able to play defense on that back end there.
Now you want to talk about Evander Kane, and I'm interested because last year at this time you had the same. Zach Bogosian was in the same situation as Evander Kane last year, in that he's an RFA with no leverage.
Yeah.
And you said last year there's nothing really to worry about. This deal will get done prior to training camp starting.
Yeah.
And it did. It took until, you know, August.
Early September. Yeah.
Yeah. It took until late August, early September for Zach Bogosian to get signed, and you know, and you didn't have a problem with it. You said that's how it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's good possibly to work differently with Evander Kane?
Is
it because he's got more talent and he's coming off a better year than Bogosian was?
Coming off a better year. There's obviously rumblings of whether or not he's happy here. I think terms a little bit. I think you know what you got in Kane more than you knew what you had in Bogosian. So I think that makes the negotiations different and unique in that way. Because with Bogosian, both player and team were probably like, well, we don't really know what's going on here. We don't know if we like Winnipeg. We don't know if we like you as a player. But we could. So here's 2 years. 1 year's a little bit short. Here's 2 years. Let's figure it out. So far, it seems like they've matched up quite well. But with Kane, you know what Kane is. Kane's a goal scorer.
Yeah.
Kane scored 30 goals last year, 20 years old. He's going to be a good goal scorer.
Something that you pay a premium for in the NHL.
Right. So with that being said, you know, to me, they may question some other things about him, but they don't question his goal scoring skill level.
Right.
So I think that makes the negotiations a little bit more interesting. Now, we don't know if he wants term, if he wants. We don't know anything about that.
Right.
So I think this is there's a few more factors at play this year. And I think that's why it's a little bit different than Bogosian was.
Right, Richie. There isn't that unknown factor, or there aren't as many.
Right.
Well, let's not put it that way. Maybe there are questions, but you're right. The questions are different because Evander Kane, when I look at Evander Kane, and we've talked about this basically since the Thrashers moved here, that Evander Kane is an amazing talent that doesn't come along very often. And when Richie did his analysis of what Evander Kane is worth and should be paid on the Legal Curve website, we talked about that there just aren't that many guys at his age that score 30 goals. You think, the Crosbys, the Ovechkins, all these guys, there just aren't a lot of guys that do it. And again, last year he had major slumps. He went 15 games without a goal.
Sure.
His talent level is not in dispute.
I mean, he scored 30 goals as he last year playing second line, second PP, not being on the ice on 5-on-3s and many other factors. He still scored 30.
Yeah.
And
missed a number of games.
Yeah, and playing with below average talent. So,
Drew,
I mean, there's numerous factors.
When I think about Evander Kane, I think, you know, this is a guy that you want to sign long term. And by when I say long term, I should qualify that, because I'm not talking 12 years. I'm talking, you'd probably want to lock up Kane for 5 years. But
again, that would be 1 year of UFA status, too.
There you go. So even 4 years.
That would be no years of UFA.
You're doing is you're buying out his arbitration eligible years. So if you're buying out 4 years, you're gonna pay him more. Assuming he keeps trending upwards on his goal scoring and his skill level, which you would assume he will just based on his talent and the fact he's going to mature and develop and everything else, you're going to have to pay a pretty penny. I mean, last year his salary cap hit was $3.1 million.
That was the cap hit. That's what he made.
Right. That's his cap hit. That's his salary plus whatever bonuses he achieves.
No. Because he was on the last year
achieved,
of his...
possibly. Achieves. We don't know what they were.
Right. You don't know
last
exactly
year of an entry-level deal, there was... I bet there was milestones like 30 goals and stuff like that, but you have to think that, you have to think, Drew, that his agent, Craig Oster, you'd have to think that he's reticent to give more than 2 years as well, or 3 years even, because then that takes away his arbitration rights. I think it's going to be like you know, we've mentioned before too. You have to think it's going to be 2 to 4 years.
I mean, I honestly don't know, and I think that's, you know, we talk about signing Ponikarovsky. That's fine. That's fine. These are bridges to the younger players. Eventually, they're older guys. I mean, there's a bunch of 30-something guys in this team now who are on short-term deals. Short-term deals aren't a bad thing. Talent-wise, they're fine. They're going to, you know, don't get too attached to these guys. They're not here for the long haul as far as I'm concerned. But, and then signing Jokinen in here too, fine. But the bigger issues I want to know about how this organization is going to form its, you know, form moving forward.
Right.
Is we just have the Pavlik deal, and what are they going to do with Kane, and what are they going to do with Enstrom? That's what I want to know.
Yep.
These free agent signings are fine and dandy, but they don't really tell us much about Chevy.
Chevy's
not going to tell us much about Chevy.
Evander Kane is the most important one.
His moves are going to tell us about him. He doesn't say anything to the media, and he's more entitled to do that. But it's his moves that are going to tell us what he's all about. And we really don't know much about him.
Like you said at the beginning of the show, talk is cheap.
When
you're in a pressure situation, and it's a pressure, it's a pressure situation when you're negotiating with, you know, a guy like Craig Oster, Kane's agent.
Yeah.
That's a pressure situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you pull the trigger on a potential Tobias Enstrom deal, or do you sign him long term? I mean, those are pressure situations where a GM you know, GMs can sign one-year deals till the cows come home, right. And nobody's going to care because it's a one-year deal. And like we said, there's no bad thing about a one-year deal. If the Jets sign Alex Semin to a one-year, $6 million deal, which, you know, after the end of the year, if it was a bust, nobody's going to think too much about you because it only cost you 1 year.
Right.
Didn't really hurt
That's the
development of the team.
As far as Evander Kane goes, Drew, sorry to cut you off. As far as Evander Kane goes, I mean, you've signed Andrew Ladd to 5 years. Chevy has. Then he signed Pavlik to 5 years. Obviously, Ladd's already played 1 year, but those are his long-term contracts, if you want to call it that. I'd have absolutely no problem, and I think fans would like to see Kane sign for 5 years. We have no idea if that's what Kane's camp is interested in.
We have no idea. You're right about that. But in terms of talent, if you want the best, the most talented Winnipeg Jets under contract for as long as possible, Evander Kane under a long-term deal is the way to get that done. We'll see if it ends up happening that way because there are two sides to every negotiation. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Hajka from the Dallas Morning News is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Dallas Stars beat writer for the Dallas Morning News. Mike Hajka, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you very much. Dallas Stars have been in the news a lot this offseason. We wanted to get you on to talk about that. It's quite possible we might be seeing Dallas more often if the realignment proposal ever gets approved, but we'll deal with that at another day and time. Let's start with the Derek Roy trade. It was announced earlier this week that he needs some extensive surgery and he's going to be out until November. Do the Dallas Stars still make that trade if they know that Roy needs that surgery?
That's a good question. I think they do, simply because they have looked around for a number two center, and they're hoping he's a long-term answer. And it's been a frustrating, you know, search. I think they were in on Kyle Turris, but Phoenix didn't want to trade him to a divisional rival. I think they were in on Cody Hodgson, but Vancouver didn't want an older player like Steve Ott. You know, they wanted a younger player like Zach Cassian. So, you know, those were two younger guys who I think they, you know, really were interested in. And then I think they looked at, I think, Sam Gagne, and I think what they heard is that Edmonton's probably not going to trade him. And so you start looking around, and Derek Roy's a pretty good option. And I think if you look at what went into their decision to have this surgery, one, they think it's a good long-term, you know, answer to what his shoulder problem was. And two, there's a very good chance the season doesn't start on time. And I think that as much as they can't say it, I think they've had a big part in their decision-making to go ahead with the surgery. Because, I mean, Reguerre and Ruff said, you know, he played through it before, he'll play through it again. It was not that big of a deal. But I think when the Stars got him and they thought, okay, look, we want this guy for the long term. We want him to be healthy. We want him to be a 60, 70-point scorer. Let's get him healthy. And so they just made the decision. And I think in retrospect, they probably would have traded because I think at this point in time, Derek Roy is the best, you know, available second-line center out there.
Mike, sticking with Derek Roy, and, you know, maybe you can share some information with our listeners, but why didn't they do a comprehensive physical before that trade was finalized?
I don't think they ever do. It's funny because this has been an eye-opening experience. One of the guys I talked to said that Jaromír Jágr still hasn't been through a comprehensive physical yet. They signed him to $4.5 million.
That might be because he can't do comprehensive exercise.
That's right. Or he's in the Czech Republic. And, you know, they had a hard enough time just getting a fax contract in here. As much as we all think that there's comprehensive physicals, there's a certain amount of trust between the organizations, and I'm sure that the Buffalo Sabres did a comprehensive physical on him when he, you know, left at the end of the season, and that, you know, then they exchanged their medicals. They were fine with the medicals. Either they knew about the shoulder or they had concentrated so much on the quad, hamstring, hip problems back problems that he supposedly had that they missed the shoulder, or they knew about the shoulder. They got him in here. The doctor, you got their own doctor to look at it and said, hey, can he play through it? And the doctor said, well, if we tighten this up, and I think that's all they really did. They went in and did a posterior tightening of some of the ligaments there just to make sure that everything, you know, doesn't get loose. and said, hey, he'll be back in November. And they looked at each other and said, you know, there's a really good chance there's not going to be hockey until November, so let's go ahead and do this. You know, so on the surface, it looks really awful. But behind the scenes, I think this is kind of just how the NHL does business. And, like, you know, we were talking, they had their development camp out there this week, and so we were talking about this a lot. And from everything that I've heard, Stefan Robida is playing through hip pain pretty much the last 3 or 4 years. He's had it addressed. He's had treatment. But, you know, the surgery would put him down for like 6 months, so he's never had the surgery, and he just plays through it. And Stefan Robida has been one of their best defensemen. And, you know, so, you know, if you went in and told every single player you have to have everything fixed and you have to be 100%, there wouldn't be a whole lot of trades made. So they just, I think they trust the other team's medicals. And then once they get a player in here, they have to make decisions based on their own, you know, their own doctors and what they want to do. And I do believe that the fact that, you know, the seasons, you know, couldn't be delayed had a lot to do with their decision.
Mike, one of the reasons why Derek Roy was a player they were interested in was because the team dealt Mike Ribeiro at the draft to Washington for Cody Eakin, a draft pick. How much of that trade was getting rid of Ribeiro pending UFA after next year, although so was Roy, and how much of that was actually getting a player of Eakin's quality?
A little of both. And again, you know, if you look at Eakin's history, the guy was a top-level scorer in the Western Hockey League. And the Stars have a player, Matt Frazier, in the system who had 37 goals for their AHL team last year and played in the AHL All-Star game. And he was Cody Eakin's line mate there in Kootenay in their playoff run. Mm-hmm. And I think this is right. I think it was 19 games played for each of them, 27 points for each of them. So there is some high-end potential there in getting Cody Eakin. And like I said, they've had their eye on people like Kyle Turris and Sam Gagne and Cody Hodgson, and those guys have all slipped away. So, you know, they've been looking for every single option they can in that area, which is I call it a number two center. You know, it's a top six center is what they're looking for. And, you know, not only did they not have it in the NHL, they didn't have it in the AHL either. So they're trying to get as many as they can get. So Cody Eakin was a big part of this. The other thing is a lot of the Stars' brain trust is from Western Canada, and they do a lot of their scouting in Western Canada. They find some of their best players in Western Canada. And so clearly they had a very strong opinion of Cody Eakin. We'll see if it plays out or not. But they believe in this kid. They believe that he's going to be, you know, a really good, talented center who might be a three but could scale up to a two. And, you know, could be a 50-point guy, could be a guy who could really help your organization. So in that regard, getting that player was a big part of the trade. The second part of it is I just don't think they were going to re-sign Mike Ribeiro. I think they were to the point where they knew what he was. They didn't really believe that what he did is fitting what they're trying to do. And so they were going to move past him when he became a UFA. So if that's the case, you know, let's go try and get something. I don't think they didn't like Mike Ribeiro. I think that what happened last season especially is that Ribeiro overstays his shifts, wants to be the guy who, you know, can save the day. And because of that, you know, it was affecting Jamie Benn. On some of the numbers, I think this is right, but I believe Jamie Benn had an average of one more shift per game, 23, to Ribeiro's 22, and Ribeiro played almost 2 full minutes more than Benn a game.
Wow.
Now, some of that's power play time, and some of that has to be worked out in, you know, in the right ways, but when you look at that, you're just shocked that, you know, I like Mike Ribeiro. I think he's a very talented player, but you shouldn't have that guy, you know, playing number one centerman if your future sits with Jamie Benn. And so this move, a lot of it was dictated on, you know, we're going to get a guy in here who's going to play in a secondary role, and that's Derek Roy or Cody Eakin. And the number one minutes are going to go to Jamie Benn. And, you know, we're going to force the coaching staff to make that decision. And, you know, that's kind of where they are. You know, I think the trade of Ribeiro had a lot to do with it's time that Jamie Benn steps forward and is the centerpiece of this team.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Mike Hyka. He's the Dallas Stars beat writer with the Dallas Morning News. Mike, the Stars made a splash in the free agent market, getting a couple of older veterans. We'll start with Ray Whitney first. Why did the Stars feel comfortable giving Ray Whitney a second year on his contract?
Well, obviously they have some people who know him, and they believe that he's the type of guy who's going to take care of his body. He's not had durability issues up to this point. You know, he had 77 points last year, and he's a good leader. I mean, everybody you talk to, and I don't know Ray Whitney, I've never been around him, but everybody you talk to says this is a guy who's, you know, a team guy, a dedicated guy, a guy who's a great example as far as conditioning goes. And so if that means they just have to give him a second year on his contract, they were fine with that. The other thing that's interesting is he's, you know, a quote-unquote playmaking winger. So if he were to play with Jamie Benn, who is, you know, he's got a great release and is a good goal scorer, then he could actually, you know, Whitney could be the playmaker in the line, and Benn, who's a natural winger playing center, could, you know, might actually become a goal-scoring center. So that was part of the theory before they got Jaromír Jágr. And then even if he doesn't play with Benn and plays on the second line, there's a goal scorer over on the right side, Michael Ryder, who's, could be a guy who I think was Radim Vrbata had 35, I think it was last year. And Whitney was a big part of that. So there are places on this team where Ray Whitney fits both in, you know, leadership and you know, quality of human, and also in, you know, hey, that guy might be a good player who could help our other players play better. So they felt that was a good option. The other thing, in before the CBA, is, I mean, if the floor really is $54 million, they got to spend some money to get to the floor. I mean, it was a problem last year. If the floor is $54 million again this year, you know, they'll probably just barely be above it. So handing out a deal like that isn't killing them. It's not like they're, you know, pushing the cap or anything.
Mike, obviously the other big free agent signing that the Stars made was acquiring Jaromír Jágr. What was appealing about signing Jaromír Jágr to that one-year deal?
This one is a little perplexing to me. I almost think that this is all about selling tickets because they're having trouble down here. They averaged 14,000 last year, which was 27th in the league. They had some games where there were 7,000, 8,000 bodies in the building. They want to improve their top six. They want to improve their power play. Jágr is clearly a great example of hard work and leadership. He's an icon to people who are in the organization, like Tomas Tuomas or Radek Faksa or some of their other, you know, European players. So he carries that the same way that Whitney does. But I just think the name Jaromír Jágr is very enticing to them. And again, they got to get to the floor. They got to spend money. They wanted to improve their top six. And so this was a short-term deal. That's the other thing about all this stuff, is they do believe that they have, you know, 8-10 players who are, you know, 19 to 22 who could be playing in the NHL in the next 2 years. So instead of going after, you know, Shane Doan for 4 years or Alex Semin or any of these other players who they'd have to sign to a couple, you know, 3-4 year deals, getting Jágr on a 1 year deal allows them to be competitive next season, allows the fans to have something to be excited about next season, and yet doesn't stand in the way of, you know, hopefully one of these kids who they're going to have in the AHL this season to make the step up if they have to.
Mike, what should we make of the Brendan Morrow rumors?
I talked to Joe. I talked to Brendan. They both are on the same page that Brendan wants to stay, and Joe wants him to stay, but with a caveat. And the caveat is, if a team comes to Joe Nieuwendyk and says, "We really want Brendan Morrow, and we're going to give you this 22-year-old player," then Joe's going to say, "You know, that's something we should consider." And then he'll take that to Brendan and say, "Is this a team you want to play for?" And Brendan made it clear, look, if they don't want me here or if they think that trading me is a good thing, then, you know, I'll waive my no-trade clause because I don't want to be in a place where I'm not wanted. But at this point, both people, and they're good friends, they play together and they know each other and they've known each other for a while, so I think they're going to be pretty honest with each other. They're both on the same page that there is a place for Brendan Morrow on this team, that he's still the captain and leader of this team, that they want to do everything they can to get him completely healthy, and then they'll move forward from that. But like I said, the caveat in both of them, I think have shared this information, is that if a great deal comes up, and you know, this will be very interesting if Shane Doan does go on the open market, let's say, you know, eight teams are in the bidding for him, and, you know, a team misses out and was really close and was really disappointed that he didn't get Shane Doan. Well, you could get Brendan Morrow for 1 year at $4.1 million. And to me, that's a pretty good deal. So then the question becomes, what are you willing to give up in a prospect to get Brendan Morrow? And you'd have to knock Joe Nieuwendyk's socks off, but if you're willing to do that, then I definitely think that he'll go to Brendan and say, hey, this is a great deal, and I can't turn it down. Are you willing to waive your no-trade clause to go to Team X? And that's where they are right now. They're very honest with each other. They both know it's a business, but they also know that, you know, he has a place on this team, and, you know, they would love him to come back. And they've lost a lot of grit, and you know, they still don't really have what you could consider a force in front of the net on the power play. And so Joe said that, you know, very clearly. There's, you know, he may have to play on the third line, you know, if you're just drawing up the lines when the team's at full strength. But he's a guy who would probably be in front of the net on the power play, would probably still get, you know, 15 minutes a game. He's not going to drop to the fourth line. He's not going to, you know, become a player who's not important to the team. He would be an important part of the team, you know, and that's at full health. And there's a really good chance that, you know, some of these older players, you know, don't play 82 games. So, you know, having that kind of depth where if someone does get hurt and Brendan can move into the top six, that's something I think the team would really like to keep around.
Mike, is there a concern at all in terms of some of the guys they brought in? They brought in Jágr, they brought in Whitney, as we mentioned, and we've discussed, and we just discussed Brendan Morrow. You mentioned Michael Ryder. Is there a concern at all that the Stars are going to lack a little bit of foot speed to compete with some of the better teams in the West?
I think there's a concern they're going to lack a lot of things. I mean, they barely, for the past 4 years, they've been, you know, I shouldn't say happy, but they've been content to be a very low payroll team that's fighting just. And their goal is eighth place. I mean, I hate to say that is their goal. If they can get into the playoffs, they will be ecstatically happy. They missed the playoffs 4 years in a row. So as much as they can talk about, hey, we really want to be the best team. If we get in the playoffs, we can be the Kings, yada, yada, yada. I think they have a fairly good idea that they're not one of the top, you know, 10 teams in the NHL right now. And they'd like to get to that place. They have a new owner, and like I said, they have a bunch of young kids, and they believe that they can get to that place. But this is clearly a team that's a patchwork, that they're just trying to fill holes for right now, that it's not the perfect answer in a lot of different ways. I mean, I've been doing a couple of these interviews just since all of the, you know, all of the trades and free agent signings, and one guy asked me, and it was a great question, what's their identity? And they really don't have one. I mean, Joe Nieuwendyk came in with Mark Crawford and a veteran team saying, hey, we're going to go for it right now. Then that didn't work out. So, Madonna's gone, Turco's gone, Crawford's gone, Lettinen's gone. You know, they turn the page and they go to this younger coach. And so then they're going to be pesky and hard to play against. And, you know, Steve Ott and Adam Burrish and Jake Dowell and Sheldon Sorey, and that's, you know, all their free agent signings, and Vernon Fiddler. And, you know, this is going to be a gritty, grindy team, and we're going to scrap for everything we got. And now a year later, you know, they don't have Steve Ott. They don't have Adam Burrish. They don't have Jake Dowell. They don't have Sheldon Sorey. And, they have Ray Whitney and Jaromir Jágr. And you're like, well, what's your identity? And the bottom line is they don't have one. They're trying to become a team that is going to be good in a couple of years. And in the meantime, they're kind of in a stopgap stage. And they don't want to say that, and they don't want to admit it, but I think the actions speak louder than words in that, you know, they're just changing their identity from year to year. They would like to be a high-skilled puck possession team next year. Now, that's, you know, pretty strange for a team that had one of the, you know, greatest differentials in shots against the shots on goal. I mean, they were minus 2.6, which I think, again, was 26th or 27th in the league. And now you're telling me we're not going to be that gritty, grinding team that takes too many penalties. We're going to be a puck possession team that takes almost no penalties, and we're going to do it in one summer. It's a lot to change. So, you know, we'll see. It's a work in progress, for sure.
One of the keys to those possession, being a possession team, Mike's going to be Jamie Benn. Joe Nieuwendyk told you in the Dallas Morning News that he's going to be a star. It's just a matter of finishing the process. How far along are they in that process?
I think they hit a wall. I think the Stars would love to do a bridge contract. I believe they've done all their homework and have all their comparables out there. And, you know, the Matt Duchesnes and the Claude Giroux and the, you know, my guess is that, that the offer that's on the table right now is a two-year deal for $4 million a season. And I believe that, you know, that the Ben Camp has said no to that. I'm not sure. I mean, I just believe that these are the parameters they're working under, that, you know, maybe the Stars offer isn't $4 million. Maybe they'd get up to that. But, you know, that's been discussed, a two-year deal at, you know, the Matt Duchesne or Claude Giroux type, you know, cap hits, which is $375 million, you know, $4 million. And I believe that, you know, the Ben Camp has said, nah, not right now on that one. I think they would love to do a 5 or 6 year deal, and maybe, you know, I haven't heard this, but maybe even longer than that. And, you know, before the new CBA is done and get that all in. And the Stars are like, well, if we're going to do a long-term deal, we'd kind of like to know what the parameters of the CBA is. And so that's where they are right now. If they want to, if the Ben Camp wants to sign a two-year deal, I think they can at almost any time. That, you know, a negotiation could start today, could be done in a week, and he'd be under contract. But if they want to sign a long-term deal, there's a very good chance this doesn't get done until the new CBA is done.
Last question, Mike. You covered Mike Modano for many years. How seriously are you taking his comments about possibly wanting to return to the Wild next year?
Oh, he was joking.
Okay.
he was completely joking. It's funny. There's some joking to it, and then there's a little bit of needling to it, is that, you know, he was told back in the day when they, you know, when they decided not to sign him, that they had to move in a new direction. And then, you know, so of course they do, and, you know, they get Glenn Gullitson in there and they move in a new direction. And now they sign Whitney and Yager, two 40-year-old guys. And I think that really did, you know, I don't think he's mad, because I believe he's made the transition into retirement. But it was just like, what? Like, I was too old at 39, and now these guys are, you know, you're signing 40-year-olds to two-year contracts? What the heck? I'm Mike Modano. So, you know, I think he was a little incredulous to those signings. And so as soon as the whole Parisi Suter deal got done, he tweeted out there that, hey, Minnesota, I can still play. But I'm pretty sure that he's not coming back to play hockey. His interesting story on this is that he's doing work with the Allen Americans, which is a CHL team down here. And Craig Ludwig, Ed Balfour, and Richard Mapichuk are all working with this team. And I really do believe he's, you know, that Modano is trying to get his feet wet in the, I don't want to say GM side of things, but hockey operation side of things. You know, everybody who's ever talked to him has assumed that whenever he gets into an NHL, you know, quote-unquote front office, it will be in a manner of selling advertising, schmoozing fans, doing things of that nature. But this little experiment that he's doing in the CHL is, I think, testing the waters to see if he really has any kind of interest in, you know, making player movement, doing front office type work. So I think he's a guy in transition as well, just like the Stars are, and that he's trying to find out what his next career is going to be. And I think this year that he's going to spend with Allen is going to be a year spent of, you know, do I want to be a future GM? And you know, no one knows the answer just yet. So it'll be interesting to watch what he does this year.
Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's been fun.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Say it along with me now. Pizza baked.
Well done.
You know what else was baked well done? Laura's Biscuits. Those were fantastic.
Well, that's good.
I was talking to one of the Carbone owners yesterday. Big things happen with Carbone.
Really?
In the next upcoming weeks.
Some things will stay tuned for those?
Yep.
Big things.
Okay.
Big pizzas. Big cameo appearances. Big cars. Big trucks.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know either. Yeah, so,
well, not a surprise there. quick segment here before we move into the CBA discussions. Timu we signed, obviously, in Anaheim.
You see that commercial they filmed?
That was amazing.
Back?
That was really funny.
Yeah, Remus linked it.
Oh, yeah, that was very funny.
But like, he's doing paperwork or something?
Yeah, I'm coming back.
Yeah, that was funny.
He doesn't look a day over 28.
No, of course he should come back.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? You're playing at a very high level. Yeah. He lives the greatest life. Yeah. He plays in Anaheim. Yeah. There's no pressure. If he has a bad year, nobody's going to criticize him.
Yeah.
He's a god amongst hockey fans.
Yeah.
You play hockey. You know, you play hockey. You go golfing the other days of the week.
He plays 2 years and get to 700.
Yep.
700
goals.
Which
is crazy because, you know.
Yeah. I think, and Richie, and this is no offense to Jari Kurri, I think after Solani's career is over,
he's
the best European player of all time. And I'm including Nicklas Lidström in that.
It's a little bit of a stretch.
He's certainly the best Finnish player of all time.
I would say he's the best. If you look at what Timo Solani is doing now, led the Anaheim Ducks in scoring last year. If you look at his longevity, how he broke into the league with the Jets with the 76-goal, 132-point season. And I know Jari Kurri had all the Stanley Cups and all the goals. But
it's an interesting debate. You have your Forsbergs, you have your Jagers. I mean, then you talk about defense. We're talking just forwards.
Forsberg didn't have the longevity. Jager left for a little while. I think it's an interesting debate. Best European player of all time. Lidström, Lidström, Solani, and Kurri are at the top of that list.
Don't get me wrong. When you're coming in with just under 700 goals, you're more than in the conversation.
I think Lidström still wins best overall player.
Yes.
I think
Solani
wins in best forward.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think he's the best forward.
I love Solani. Don't get
you haven't beating Hawk and Lube?
Yeah, I haven't beaten it. It's neck and neck, but he beats out Hawk and Lube. I think he's best forward. I mean, with all due respect to Jari Kurri, I mean...
I think Jagers is the main competition. And yeah, Curry's in there too.
You think Jager's in there? You know, if Jager was so good, think about the number of years where Jager disappeared.
That's the only thing that hurts him.
There were so many years where
Solani had those Colorado, San Jose years where he wasn't great.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But he's found the time machine and rejuvenated himself.
It's amazing.
Drew, everyone has their bad years. For me, 23 was a bad year. So, I mean, everybody has...
I thought it was sort of 23 through 28 was a bad year.
Everybody has...
Ezzy, we haven't, by the way, spoken about the fact that you...
Stopped smoking.
Quit smoking this week. And you've been extremely ornery.
Very ornery.
Didn't think we'd bring that up on air, but yeah, I've...
Why wouldn't we bring it up on air?
If anything, we always bring it up on air. Well,
this isn't a quit smoking
show. Before we go to break here. Yeah. So, Ezzy is being quite bothersome this week.
You know, I deleted him.
Yeah, and you deleted him, apparently. You re-added him for his... Illegal procedure picks.
That's right.
And then deleted him again?
No, I didn't re-delete him.
Oh, okay.
He's still there.
So,
for now. I just ignored him.
Ezra is extra annoying this week. And so I called him at the office. I said, Ezra, you know, this is beyond how annoying you usually are. Why? But yeah, I got to be honest. I quit smoking. I'm in the worst mood.
But we will encourage you that you quit smoking.
At least I have an excuse. Instead of going into my car at lunch and smoking, well, actually... I don't go into my car and smoke because it's too hot to do that. But you know what I mean. Go outside for a cigarette. I'm on dates.
Too hot to do that. Yeah, yesterday I picked you up for lunch. It was 35 outside and you were carrying a large coffee.
I should mention the reason why want to know what made me want to quit smoking? On Monday morning, I walked out to my car. I left my car unlocked by accident. Someone stole a pack of cigarettes out of my car and left everything else.
That was the epiphany he had.
Yeah, because I'm like, if someone's going to break into my car, steal a pack of cigarettes... That's probably a sign.
It was, if I have to buy new cigarettes.
That's a sign from the Marlboro Man.
Let's go to break. We hope you keep your... We're going to keep helping you with your quit smoking.
Yeah.
Go Team Ezzy. Isn't that what they say?
Yeah.
Hashtag Team Ezzy.
Day six.
There you go. Day six. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.